It's time for CBJ in 30, presented by Telhio Credit Union. Find us on SoundCloud, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play Music, YouTube, and TuneIn. The easiest thing to do is tell Alexa or Siri to play CBJ in 30. Here's your host, Bob McGilligan.
I've got to tell you, it is a day of recovery for me. Yesterday, I worked the polls. Yes, I decided that since there was no hockey season going on and that I had the day off, I actually decided to be a poll worker for the 2020 election. And I got to tell you, it was quite the day. It was a very long day. I was on my feet a lot more than I normally am. And it was a tiring day, but I've got to tell you, if you have never done it or never had the opportunity to do it or never have thought about doing it, it was a good experience. It really was. I really enjoyed my experience with doing it. Got to be around a lot of good people who had also volunteered to be a poll worker. As a matter of fact, funny thing here, one guy comes up to me early in the morning yesterday. And of course, we all have masks on, so I don't recognize anybody, you know, that I don't see on a regular basis. This guy walks up to me and he said, "Hey, I just saw your name where you signed in the book." He said, "You played golf with my buddies and I a couple of years ago at the Blue Jackets Foundation tournament." So it was good to see him again. And I remembered that outing of golf. I was like really not good in that outing of golf. But anyway, it was good. So it was just funny, you know, funny how life works. I haven't seen this guy. It's probably been 4 years since that happened. And we ended up being poll workers together all day yesterday. But again, the people that I met that I worked with were great. The voters coming in that I had to interact with were great. So I'm just telling you, if you ever have the opportunity, as long as you're willing to put in a lot of hours in one day, it's a really worthwhile experience. I enjoyed every bit of the experience. All right. Enough about me. As a matter of fact, before I tell you anything else, well, let me preview what I got on the show. It's the 20th anniversary of the Blue Jackets. I have long wanted to go back into the history of this franchise and talk to some players. And I'm going to do that today. And I'll tell you more about that as we go on. And also, I've got a couple of questions from you that I'm going to answer too. So without further ado, let me tell you about Telhio Credit Union. Let me do it right. My mouth is still tired, obviously. Telhio Credit Union, they want you to put your money with them. You know why? Because they feel they have the best opportunities for you. They feel like when you put your money with them, it's the right place for you to put it. Now, why do they feel that way? Well, you can find out easily. Just go online to telhio.org, surf their website, find out what they're all about, find out why you should join a credit union, find out about the perks that they have with different accounts that you may not be getting with whatever financial institution you're with right now. You can do it all on your own. You don't even have to talk to anybody. But if you do want to talk to somebody, the phone number is there for you to call. Their locations are listed there for you to stop by. Or there's a live chat option right there on the screen if you want to chat with somebody in real time during business hours about what's going on. You can do that. Telhio Credit Union. Find them online at telhio.org. All right. Things are still slow in the National Hockey League, you know, not much going on, except there are some signings. You know, last week, after the show was already out, the Blue Jackets signed Calvin Turcotte to a two-way deal. Kevin Stenland has signed a deal. Ryan McInnes has signed a deal. You know, those are all good things, but they're all very, you know, they're minor type deals. No offense to any of those guys, especially Kevin Stenland, who I think has a chance to do something with this team. But, you know, no offense to them, but they're not blockbuster type signings. And that's just not going on right now. Everybody's back into a holding pattern and everybody is waiting to see what is going to happen. And there are still some big free agents out there that could get signed. So who knows? Like I said, wait and see is the only way to put it. So not a lot going on in the NHL. Kind of quiet right now. But there's still some possibilities out there. And I'm going to check my Twitter feed at Bobby Mac Sports. And here's a question coming in from Dylan, who says, "Do you think the Blue Jackets will sign any more big impact players before the start of the season, knowing that they still have to pay Pierre-Luc Dubois?" Well, that's one of the big things, obviously, right? I mean, you want to, well, not you want to, you have to. You've got to pay your top line centerman at some point. And I know there was a report that the negotiations have slowed down. Well, of course they've slowed down. There's everything is slow right now. There are no deadlines in the NHL at this point. When is training camp going to start? Nobody knows. So without that deadline, teams are not pressured to hurry up and get something done. You know, there are other players, you know, like Matt Barzell is out there needing a deal. Usually the way these kind of things work is one guy gets his deal, the other guy gets a similar deal if they're similar players. It's kind of like just waiting for that first domino to fall, okay? But there's no pressure in a timetable for the domino to fall. Nobody is in a hurry because there's no set start to the season yet. There's no set start to training camp. So it'll get done. Gavrikov will get done. Dubois will get done. It'll get done. But to go to Dylan's question here, any more big impact players, I still am of the belief that if the Blue Jackets are going to get a big impact player, and I hope they do, and I think they need to, I fully do. I agree with that. But I think if they're going to, it's going to be through a trade. There are still teams that are way over the salary cap that have got to get under that cap. There are still players that normally wouldn't be on the market that are going to be on the market. And that's where I think the Blue Jackets are going to find an impact player. Who will that be? I don't know. What team will they make a deal with? I don't know. But again, there's no deadlines. Once there's a deadline for those teams that are over the cap to have to be under the cap by a certain day, now you're going to have some movement and some activity. Okay? It's all about deadlines. And right now, there just aren't any. So could they still get a big impact guy? Yes. And if really the silent question here is about Mike Hoffman, who is the guy that is still on the free agent market, you know, who can put up 30 goals a year, you know, could they do that? Yeah, they could do that. Nobody else is doing that. Everybody's waiting. It's a waiting game. It's like, it's not musical chairs. I don't want to say that because somebody winds up without a chair, but it's just waiting. And, you know, there's a lot. It's like a chess match is what it is. Like GMs are looking at this. I'm a GM. I'm looking at you as a GM. Who's going to blink here? Who's going to give into this, or who's going to be able to coax this out of the other guy? That's where it is right now. And that's probably where it'll stay for the next couple of weeks. What else do I have? I had another question here and I want to find this because it was a good question and it does talk about signing a guy. Here it is. Greg Senko. Do you think the Blue Jackets front office could pursue bringing Anthony Duclair back? We could use the offense. Okay. Two things. I would be all in on bringing back Anthony Duclair. All right. Now, maybe not for the same reason you are. I like his speed. He was a good team guy. Everybody around liked him. He was good to have here. Now, yeah, you want the scoring, sure. He had 20 goals before the All-Star break last year. What did he have after? Like three? All right? I wouldn't sign Anthony Duclair looking for a 20 to 25 goal scoring guy. I just wouldn't. And in this system, that's not what he's going to do. But could they sign? I'm interested to watch where he goes, to be honest with you, because Ottawa offered him a deal. He felt they weren't offering him enough money. And oh, by the way, he was acting as his own agent, which is almost crazy in today's world, right? But he was representing himself. He didn't feel like they were giving him enough. They didn't want to give him what he wanted. He's a free agent. So can the Blue Jackets talk to Anthony Duclair, the agent, and get him to and accept an offer for Anthony Duclair, the player, and bring him back? I don't know. But again, I would be all for it. He's not going to be a top six guy. He'd be a bottom six guy. But a bottom six guy with feet. With feet. Yeah, they all have feet. I told you, my mouth isn't working today. It's a bad day to do a show. My brain is here. My mouth is here. They're not coordinating. Bottom six guy with speed is what I was trying to say. As a matter of fact, I did talk to one hockey person who said it would be interesting if they would get Duclair and Andreas Athanasiou and just put them on the line and let them go with that rocket fuel speed that they have, which would be interesting. It would really be interesting. And again, I wouldn't be against that either. then that gets into, well, then who doesn't play? Well, who's going to get pushed out? Listen, when it comes to that, I could care less who gets pushed out if a team is better. If you're making your team better, if you're giving your team a legit chance to go deep in the playoffs to win the Stanley Cup, no offense to Emil Bemström, but if he ends up getting pushed out because of that, that's life. That's how it goes. Or Liam Foudy, it's life. It's how it goes. There's a window. You've got to take advantage when the window is open. When the window's closed, you can play all those young guys all day long. You can get them the experience they need. When the window is open, look at the teams that are winning Stanley Cups. You know, how many are doing it as the youngest team in the league or the least experienced team or, you know, bringing guys in that have never played in this league before? Not many. Maybe not any, right? So, look, this is all talk. This is not even anything. This is me talking. This is us just shooting it back and forth here, right? But I just thought of that because that's one thing I hate. Sometimes I get in conversations and then, you know, people go, oh, but if that happens, then who's going to get pushed out? Well, that's not fair. I don't care about fair. Make it better. As long as it's better, to me, that's fair. All right. Here's the next question from Michael Guest. It says, this being the 20th anniversary of the Blue Jackets, will you have any former players on like Ron Tugnutt to talk about the early years of the Blue Jackets? Keep up the great work and enjoy the podcast. Michael, reading my mind this week. Okay, listen, as it goes on, we're going to hear from all the big guys. We're going to hear from the Andrew Castles and the Jeff Sandersons and the Ron Tugnutts and the Rusty Kleslas and, you know, all the Rick Nashes. We do that anyway. But all the guys that made this franchise special, all the guys that were here to get it established and get it going early, we're going to do all of that, okay? It's going to happen. I think it probably starts to happen soon. I don't know that we're going to wait until the start of the regular season to do that anymore, since we don't know when the start of the regular season is going to be. But anyway, you'll hear from them. But my angle is on this, what about the little guy? What about some of the players that played here for just a handful of games? You know, maybe they had some impact on a season. Maybe they're just names that you'd forgotten about. And I'd like to bring them back into your memory and your consciousness and let you know what they are doing now. And earlier this week, I saw a story that allowed me to accomplish that goal. And so, without further ado, I would like to bring in a guy that all the way back in 2002 was drafted by the Blue Jackets, came in a year later, right out of college, made his National Hockey League debut, played 6 games for this franchise, and then had a long 16-year pro hockey career that has just come to an end. All right, so get ready. Remember where I'm going here. We're going to the obscure, but the great people. And this guy I had a chance to be around for a long time. I had a chance to be around this guy for 2 or 3 years in the American Hockey League. He's a great individual. He's a great player. And now he's going to be a great coach for USA Hockey and their under-18 development team. Greg Maldon, the former Blue Jacket, joins me now on CBJ and 30. Well, Greg, I got to tell you, this is the truth. The other day, I'm going through Twitter, and I see that the American Hockey League announces that they're going to return to play in early February. And I saw a tweet from Lindsey Kramer, who's the beat writer for the Syracuse Crunch. And that's where he was announcing about that start. And I wanted to see a little bit more, so I clicked on his feed, and I started to scroll down. And lo and behold, I see a tweet that says, Greg Maldon has just taken an assistant coaching job with the USA Hockey U18 team. And I said to myself, look, it's the 20th anniversary of the Blue Jackets. I want to talk to some guys that have maybe their Blue Jackets career wasn't as long as they thought that it was going to be, but fans remember them and they did play here. You fit the bill. You've got a brand new job. And I always enjoyed our conversations in Syracuse. So thanks for taking the time, man. Congratulations. How'd this happen?
Well, thanks a lot. Thanks for having me. Just last minute. It was really strange, you know, just talking with my buddy who's the video coach for the Nashville Predators, and you know, everything's been so crazy with 2020. I had full intentions of playing this year, going back to Europe, and just, you know, kind of thrown out there like, oh, maybe I could do a scouting job, just messing around. And he's like, well, actually, our assistant coach Dan Muse got the job as a head coach with the U.S. under 18 team. You know, they're looking for an assistant. You know, I'll put you guys in contact. And so I said, yeah, sure, whatever. Like, didn't think anything of it. You know, maybe honestly, a couple hours later, him and I are talking, and he's, after an hour, he's like, hey, you mind having a Zoom chat with, you know, myself, the other coaches, and the director? Like, all right, yeah, whatever. He's like, you have a resume, and I'm like, yeah, I have elite prospects. Like, you know what I mean? Like, who have a resume for? So actually, my buddy was really helpful in helping me, like, put together something. And, you know, I had started calling people. They obviously did their research and called people. And actually, you know, I'm having a Zoom session with, you know, five people in the room, my first real interview, I guess. And whatever I said, it went well. I was able to fool them, I guess. And, you know, the next day on a Saturday, less than 36 hours, the first talk, they offered me the job, and I didn't need any time to think about it right away. I was, you know, I said yes, because I knew after the first talk, I was like, I really want this job. And then after the Zoom session, the next day, I was like, no, I really want this job. And I would have been upset if I didn't get it. So to get it 36 hours later, to get offered the job was really special and exciting.
I want to talk to you more about your approach to this brand new venture in your career. But of course, you know, one of the big things on social media now is how it started and where it is now. So I want to go back to where it started for you. And of course, for you, it started really when it comes to the Blue Jackets. You were playing college hockey at UMass Amherst, and you were a seventh round pick by the Blue Jackets back in 2002. And lo and behold, about a year later, you wind up coming to Columbus, played a couple of games, played six games with the Columbus Blue Jackets, spent a lot of time. You and I spent a lot of time together in Syracuse in the American Hockey League. But man, where does it, as you come to an end of a 16-year professional hockey career, do you still remember those days being back in college, coming out of college and joining the pro ranks and getting a chance to skate right away in the NHL?
Yeah, I do. I remember being really excited and nervous at the same time. Gerard Gallant was the coach at the time. Had some really good guys. It was a bit strange because they had guys there like Andrew Castles and Jeff Sanderson, and they played for the Hartford Whalers when I was growing up, so like to see them was kind of like, I didn't like them just because they played for Hartford Whalers and I was a Boston guy. They had some really good guys there, really, really good guys. Obviously, you know, Rick was there, but, you know, like Manny Malhotra was there, and he was a really good guy, and Jordy Shelley, those guys were really nice, and kind of took me under their wing. But, you know, just, I remember just getting, going there and thinking to myself, like, this isn't Kansas anymore, this is different. And I remember after that first, I was only at the first six games, but after that six games, I got sent down because the season was over. I was thinking to myself, I almost wish I could have gone back to college and started playing again. Cause in that time, I learned so much about the game of hockey that I was like, man, if I could go back for my senior year now, I feel like I'd have so much more to give to the players and myself in my own game. But, you know, make choices and you don't look back. And, then, like you said, you know, unfortunately, the lockout happened that following year, and that lockout year was something special with all the players that would have been in the NHL that were in the American League that year.
Yeah, remember that. I mean, even on that Syracuse team, Francois Beauchemin was playing there all year long. He would have been in the NHL. You know, Jason Spezza was playing in Binghamton, and I think we played them like 112 times throughout the course of the season. You're right. There were a lot of young prospect guys that would have been in the National Hockey League that played in the American Hockey League. So, I mean, that year, you know, you could probably go back and if somebody wanted to really go through all the stats, it might have been one of the most, if not the most competitive league in the American Hockey League.
Yeah, I mean, I think about it now. I think, like, you know, I know Rochester had Ryan Miller, and they had Pominville, they had Vanek. You know, I think Parisi was down there with in Albany. Binghamton was stacked with Spezza. They had Ray Emery, they had Chris Kelly, Volchenkov was there. Yeah, if you go down the list, you know, Ryan Whitney was there and Wilkes-Barre with Fleury. You know, just the whole league was something. I was thinking to myself, geez, like, maybe I should have stayed. You know what I mean? Like, looking back on it, you're like, is that the way you want to start your pro career with all these guys that, you know, I remember one shift we played in Binghamton, and like Spezza had the puck and like went through three of our guys, and you know, Gary Agnew's like, hit him, and then, you know, kind of turned into the coach and was like, well, I guess that's why he's a second overall pick. You know what I mean? Like, but yeah, I mean, that league that year was, you know, like, oh geez, like, here, welcome to pro hockey. No matter how many goals you think you scored in juniors or in college, how good you thought you were, like, there's a lot of good players out there. And, you know, it's one of those things, like, you think about back on it, you're like, it definitely probably wasn't the way to get introduced to professional hockey, but you learn a lot in that time. You learn a lot about yourself and, you know, about hockey during that time. So it was good. It was a good time.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up because, you know, looking back, it's kind of easy to forget because it was so long ago. But as you were rattling through all those names, it really started to go through my mind again, like, yeah, man, we saw some really good teams and some really good players throughout the course of that year. And again, that was one of a couple of years of you in Syracuse and in the Blue Jackets organization. You know, my favorite thing about you being in the organization was always being the guy sitting right behind me on the bus. That was, you know, I thought you had the best seat on the bus because we had the best conversations.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, we had a lot of conversations. It's funny now, I don't know if you got the YouTube thing that I sent you about the Leon guy, you know.
Yes.
that was our big thing back then. Guys, I was looking at commercial. I kept looking at some of those. The guy's pretty funny. But, yeah, no, you know, like, those bus trips, you know, those 3-and-3s, those, you know, 3-and-4s. I think at one point we had 6-and-7. It was, you know, you spent a lot of time on the bus getting to know guys. And it was a lot different then. You know, you didn't have your iPads and your iPhones or anything like that. You know, you had maybe your Discman. If the batteries ran out, you're reading the book, you had the team DVDs that you were watching. It was a different time. But you know that's, you know, you tell some of the kids about it now, but like, how did you survive?
If that rookie that was in charge of the movies picked bad movies, then he was going to get an earful and it was going to be a long trip.
You could never pick a good movie as a rookie. You just, oh, that's terrible. Like, you rookies are terrible. We were way better than you. Like, you know, that's just the way it was. And I know, like, it happened to us, me, Gertzen, and Penner in my first year. And then we started putting the next year on guys like Picard and and Jeff Platt and Mathot. So it just, it's the way it goes.
Now, after you left the Columbus organization, I mean, look, I just said you played for 16 years and you played in many different cities. You played in many different leagues. You got back to the National Hockey League for one game with the New York Islanders and then 29 games with the Colorado Avalanche. By the time you got back later, how much of a different player were you than that first go around with Columbus?
Oh, completely different. I mean, that, you know, if I'm being very transparent with everyone, that first, you know, time up in Columbus, like, I'm lining up next to, like, Brett Hull and, you know, Forsberg and Sakic and these guys, and I'm sitting there like, man, I wonder if I can get a stick or something. You know what I mean? Like, it's kind of a surreal moment. You know, one minute I'm playing college hockey, next minute I'm lined up next to Hall of Famers. So by the time, you know, you have to remember, when I was there, I was 21. And then by the time I get my next chance up, even with the Islanders, I was 27. So there's a lot of maturing that goes on in that time. And I know for myself, like, I didn't have a contract going into my third year pro, and I had to go over to Sweden. And for that, it's funny because at that time, I learned so much about myself and about the game. Like, I think Gary, as a coach in the American League for the year and a half, 2 years that I had him, was trying to teach me so much. And maybe I just wasn't understanding it, or I wasn't grasping what he was trying to say, until I went over to Sweden for a year and saw things that maybe other players weren't doing that I thought they should be doing. I'm like, no, that's what Gary was trying to point to me. And it was one of those things, like, it was like a switch that went off, and I was like, okay, I understand now. And then when I was able to get back to Binghamton, I was able to kind of start implementing those things in my game and start progressing my career and get to where I want to. But it's funny, like, I didn't realize that at that point, and it took a little time to mature, to see the game differently, and, you know, kind of progress and stay with it, and, you know, just kind of worked hard and reset everything and started getting my bearings back. And, you know, fortunate enough, was able to to get back up. One game with the Islanders. I mean, unfortunately, I had to play Pittsburgh, and it was a tough night. But you know, that's okay. That's okay. That happened. And you know, and then that next year, I was able to get, you know, 29 games with Colorado, and that was real special.
Talk with Greg Maldon. His pro career started with the Columbus Blue Jackets. When you went to Europe to play, and all the different spots that you have picked to play, and I know, as you said, I know you played in Germany a little bit, in Sweden, and I think in Norway is where you finished up too. So when you've gone to those places and made all of those stops, you know, what kept you going back? What was that driving you to keep going year after year? And even if it wasn't going to be in the NHL, to still continue to play the pro game somewhere on the planet?
I love the game. That's it. I love the game. I've always loved it. I still love it. I had fun in those places too. You know, I spent 5 years in Switzerland, the same team, made a lot of good friends. It was just awesome. I enjoyed it. It was different. It allowed me to travel a bit more. Once you're in Europe, you can travel a lot of different places pretty easy. Things that I probably would have never done if I was still playing in the NHL, the American League. And I just think, you know, at the end of the day, it's kind of using hockey as a tool. You know what I mean? Like, these are the tools to get a free education, go to school. These are the tools to make a living. And then it was like, over in Europe, it was like, well, I still love playing. So why not use it to live in these different countries, travel, play hockey? And it's awesome because it's not the NHL. But once again, my first year over in Europe, there was a lockout. And all of a sudden, you have Sagan, Kane, you know, Duchesne, Bergeron, Tavares. All these guys are coming over again. It's like, didn't we just do this? Like, what is going on here? You guys love the lockouts? But I love playing. And I think even towards the end, even these last few years in Norway, it was just fun. It's just fun. I don't know. I try to explain. Like, I always felt like I was still that young kid that, hey, maybe I'll still get a call up someday. Or you just never know. I don't know why it feels like that. I just enjoyed kind of passing on what I had learned to a lot of young players, you know, especially these last handful of years. You know, I had a line mate that was 17 years old wearing the cage, and I'm, you know, trying to help him out and help him progress his game. That made me feel good about myself, that I was serving a purpose, not just, oh, I'm trying to play for myself, you know, but hey, what did I learn that I can pass on to him and help him progress in his career? And that's what I really started to enjoy. I started to enjoy being kind of like the player coach a little bit, and just trying to help out other guys. Like I said, hockey was still fun for me. It never got old. It wasn't a chore. It was, oh, we got to go to practice today? Oh, awesome, sweet. Like, that's the way it was for me. Oh, we're getting bags today? No big deal. I've been through a billion of them. Let's go. That's why I just thought about it. And like I always said, like, to people, like, my worst day of playing hockey, you know what I mean? Like, might be someone's best day ever. So that's the way it was.
Now, with all of that said, as much as you love the game, and you said earlier how quickly this whole coaching offer came to you and you accepted it, when did it hit you, or has it hit you yet? You're done playing, my friend. I mean, you're no longer a pro hockey player. You're now in the coaching ranks. When did that realization set in for you?
I think if you'd ask some of the guys here, they're not really sure if it has hit me yet. It's funny. It doesn't really hit me until I'll watch some of their, you know, some of them, those guys on the ice playing, and I'm like, crap, I'll never battle for a faceoff again, or wait, I'll never have to lay down and block a shot again. Wait, this is looking good. You know what I mean? Like, it's those kind of things. Like, it's been actually, we've had a couple exhibition games here, and I think I can feel like that, sometimes that fire build up in me. But that's just the way it is. You know what I mean? We're all told at some point we can't play the kids' game. So, I figured what better way to kind of pass it on is to be here with the under 18 team and help them live their dreams. Cause, you know, I really wish I had someone maybe at that age for me that had just finished playing pro that could really like just teach me everything that they've possibly learned and pass it on. And I think that's what I can do for these kids. So essentially, yes, I'm done playing, but I still feel very fulfilled in the hockey world because I'm able to help these kids and help them see stuff. And maybe not make the mistakes that I made at their age, and hopefully start them along their career through college and hopefully into the pro ranks.
Yeah, and I think that's what's the greatest thing about it, because now you've been through it, and they haven't, and they don't know. And as long as they're receptive, I think you can do great things for these kids. What's it been like for you here in the early going? Just trying, you know, you come in as a new guy. You're a rookie again. Quite frankly, you're a rookie at this job. So you come in, you've got to get to know the people you're working with. You got to get to know the other coaches. You got to get to know the players on this team. How are you going about all of that, and especially the relationships that you're now going to forge with these young men you're coaching?
Honestly, it's been fairly easy from getting to know everyone and adapting to the kids. You know, I think it's interesting. Just the way things kind of happened in my career going back to Norway before COVID, I actually ruptured my hamstring in February. So instead of just like sitting there doing the rehab, I actually jumped on the coaching staff of my team, doing the video work, helping out, being the in-between guy. So I was almost starting my career as a coach before I even took this job. And then once I accepted this job, coming in, like, I couldn't ask for a better coaching staff to work with. Dan Hughes, the assistant coach for the Nashville Predators for the last 3 years. He's a Massachusetts guy. We got along really well just from our phone conversation. So at that point, I knew I was like, okay, this is going to be a good one. And then Mike Leone, he's been here. He's, I think, 32, and we've had good chemistry. And they've been kind of just drip-feeding me stuff. They didn't just come in and say, oh, here's everything. It's been like each day a little bit more, adding here, adding there. And, you know, the players, they're kids. They're 17-year-old kids. They're great kids. Like, really, I know a lot of people say about people with these kids, they're really great kids. You know, and I don't want to say you can mold them, but there's so much – You sometimes see their skill level and you're like, oh my God, these kids are they have way more skill than I do. But then you hear them talk and you're just like, ah, you're 17.
That's how I felt about you in the bus when you were sitting behind me at that time, just so you know.
I was 22, so I mean, you know, but it's awesome. Like, the kids are great. You know, it's good because, like you said, I think the reason why they wanted to bring me in is the two coaches never played very high professionally, didn't play very long. I think Dan only played Division III, and Michael only, I think, played a handful of games in the East Coast League. So I think me coming after playing at higher levels and for so long, it gives a different perspective. You know, they've been coaching as long as I've been playing. So all of a sudden, I come in fresh off of playing, and I can see things differently than they might. And I think that helps the chemistry between the three of us. It's different though, you know, like usually at the rink for 3.5-4 hours, maybe at the most. You know, you go in, play, practice, work out, shower, leave, go home. You don't go home after your practice. You're there early, you're there late doing video work, which has been the toughest thing, that, you know, getting the video stuff down and cutting up clips and that sort of thing. But, you know, the second day that I was here, I was thinking to myself, wow, these are long days. And now, it's getting a lot easier, and, you know, we're just trying to figure out a good routine, but now I'm liking it a lot. There's a lot of busy work. It's not just the on ice stuff, especially after, remember, these kids are 17, you got to make sure they're getting their schoolwork done. Are they working out? Are they being responsible, especially now with COVID? Like, hey, you're wearing your mask, are you doing the right things to keep yourself healthy? Just everything. And then just to work on their all around game, you know, taking guys aside, hey, want to watch this video last game because I noticed this in your game that maybe you can improve on. Oh, I had the same problem when I was your age. Like, let's work on this together. Oh, you need to work on your shooting? Here, let's pass some pucks after practice. Let's do some shooting drills. So there's a lot of stuff that each day there's something new, something different. But I enjoy it. I enjoy it so far. I enjoy being around being the young guys, the energy that they bring. And I think I bring energy to them too. I've been on days when they're like, oh, man, like, stupid COVID again. Like, you know, we're at the rink for 8 hours a day. It's like, nah, I got you guys. Let's go. Let's go do something fun, or let's go shoot some pucks in the shooting room. So I try to bring that to them.
Are there, now that you're starting to look at things this way, are there any coaches that you've played for that stand out to you? Or some guys, whether it's one or two guys, maybe it's a whole bunch of guys, I don't know, but some where you say, yeah, I definitely want to take a piece of what he taught me, or how he conducted himself, or the accountability, whatever it is. Are there some coaches that stand out throughout your career that you want to kind of be like in some way?
I don't know if I'd want to be like, but I would definitely take a lot from them. Like I said, mentioned earlier, like Gary was trying to teach me something that maybe I wasn't ready to receive at that point, or I wasn't understanding how to receive it. Mainly just like, you know, you come from college, like a scoring goal is like, now it's pro level, like, hey, finish checks, do all these little things, right? Block shots, play harder, play more consistent, these kind of things. So that kind of message is something that I ended up bringing back with me when I was in Sweden and completely changed. I feel like I changed from my first 2 years pro to like after that. I was like, okay, I'm a different player now. Even if I watched video, I'm sure I'd be like, wow, that, like, hey, Greg, what are you doing there? So I'd take kind of that stuff from him, just those kind of messages. Dave Quinn was a guy that I really respected really, really well. Obviously not with the New York Rangers, but he was a coach that I had for two seasons, and just his message, because he was coach at this program, and then when I had him, we had a pretty young team, and he was honest. He was very honest. You could have a conversation with him. Sometimes you didn't always like what he had to say, but he was honest with you, and you could respect him at the end of the day. He had no problem admitting when he was wrong. That wasn't often, but he had no problem admitting it. And I think a lot of guys, when you look back at it, like, you respect him as a coach, but also respect him as a player or as a person. And I think that went a long way for us to have actually some success and for guys to say, okay, I'll play for you. I want to play for you. You know, I know for one instance, they killed us all week on practice and workouts. And we lost two games in overtime that we probably should have won. And he was rip-roaring in the locker room after the second game, furious. And then, you know, Monday we came in expecting to get it. And he just came back and he said, you know, guys, I overreacted. After watching the video, I just thought you guys were tired. And I remember just everyone at that point was kind of like, oh, wow, this guy's, he's with us. He's not, you guys lost, you guys. This is like, we messed up. We didn't do this. And I remember after that, he was like, all right, we're putting 40 minutes on the clock for practice. That's how long we're going. We're going to go short and hard, and then we'll see what happens. I remember we ripped off like 8 or 9 games in a row after that because we were all in it together. Guys were just like, okay, he's with us. He's not against us.
You know, you talked about the fact you want these kids to get better. And I'm talking with Greg Maldon. He went from UMass to the Blue Jackets, had a 16-year pro career. You talk about these kids on the U.S. national team, the U18 team, and maybe helping them get better and going to college. As you look back in what has been like 20 years now, how much has the college game changed? How much more is college? There's so many more guys now that go to college to play in the NHL. You know, once upon a time, it was an outlier. Now it seems to be, you know, just as prominent a path as playing junior hockey to get into the National Hockey League. How much has college hockey changed? And how much have you noticed that change? And you can help these kids through the things you're talking about to get to that level.
Yeah, I think where college hockey has changed a lot, you start to see a little bit, a guy's going in a little bit more mature. You start to see guys who are, you know, 22, 23, 24 years old, and then they're turning pro because they'll play all the years as a junior, maybe redshirt a year, and then some of them come out at, you know, 23 or 24, much more mature physically, mentally, and that sort of thing. And it's just a different route. It's, you know, some guys need that time to develop their strength and need to get bigger. Some guys need that on ice time, so maybe major junior or is the way to go for them. Some guys, if you're lucky, you know, you have your exceptions, like a Jack Eichel who plays for a year, light it up, and then leave. But then some guys, you know, go for 3 years and leave, and I think that's fine. You got some guys like, you know, like a Jimmy Vesey who plays his 4 years out and then kind of have his pick of where he wants to go, essentially. But it gives guys time to develop. Like I said, like, there's a lot of growing that you can do within that time, and it gives, I think, the team that drafts you a little bit longer time to watch you grow. I think college, you know, let them sit there, develop. You can watch them grow, watch them get stronger, and then see what happens. There's maybe less rush on guys. And obviously, you're getting that education at the same time. So, yeah, I mean, it's just different. It's really different. I remember, you know, some guys are starting to come out when they're a little bit older. When I was, like, I think, like, Chris Kunitz came out, he was a little bit older. But then you start to see more of a trend of guys that wanted to go to college. You know, everyone's going to choose their routes. Like, you know what I mean? Like, for instance, like, you have an American like Patrick Kane going major junior, and then you have a Canadian like Jonathan Toews going to college, or end up in the same area, same spot, but just two different paths.
All right. The last thing I want to ask you before I let you go is, Do you still pay any attention to the team that you broke into the National Hockey League with? Because, you know, we got a big, New Englander and John Tortorella who's running the ship here too. So, you know, I know that's near and dear and close to your heart, but you still keep an eye on what the Blue Jackets do?
Yeah, but not really because of, that was my first team, but just because of hockey. I mean, it's funny because I played with Nick Foligno a little bit when he was in Binghamton. And it's just funny to see that he's a captain now. When you think about a younger Nick Foligno, I'm like, man, he's a captain now. So that's just how people mature, right? And I know, I remember playing against Elvis Merzlikin there when he was in Lugano. And it's like, wait, I remember that guy. Oh, he's putting the show now? He's doing well? Okay, good for him. So people come up. Hockey's such a small world. You always run into people. Our names keep coming back up, that sort of thing. So, I'll watch. It's really cool to see how well they've done. From when I was there, it was kind of like, this is tough here. To now, like, they're that team that, after knocking off Tampa that one year, almost did it again, this year, which, I was rooting for them, to be honest. It was really special. I thought they had a good team. I thought they were going to do it, actually. Unfortunately, I was one of those people that stayed and watched that whole 5-overtime game. And, when it ended, it was kind of like, oh, man, on that. Like, I felt so bad for him. He blocks the shot. He's hurt. And the puck, you know what I mean? You're just like, damn. But, that's tough. It's actually kind of funny because, it's coming right around the 10-year anniversary of when I scored my first NHL goal against the Blue Jackets. So, that's something I'll always cherish, the fact that I scored my first goal against the team that drafted me.
Well, I can't wait to tell Nick Foligno that you're surprised he's a captain, and I want to see how surprised he is you're a coach.
Yeah, it's probably two big surprises, though, I'm sure. But, you look at it now, you figure it out. You're like, oh, yeah, he has all the intent. He has it all, right? But it's just funny, as a young guy, when he comes in his first, second year pro, you're like, but that's just a maturity. We all mature from 18, 19, even from 20 to 25, from 25 to 30. He's having success, and, the team is too. I'm sure they want to have a little bit more, but I'm sure they will, but it's not easy. Only one team can win the Stanley Cup, and it doesn't get any easier.
I got to tell you, the thing I'm most jealous about with you is that at least you're with a team and you're doing something right now, because we're still sitting here waiting to go. So, hey, congratulations on that. Make sure you stay safe, which I know that you will. But I really couldn't be happier for you. I think it is very well deserved. And again, when I saw the news, I was there when right next to you when you started playing. So I thought, when you started playing pro. So I thought, you know what? I got to get with this guy as he's starting a new chapter in his career. So best of luck to you, my friend. I hope everything works out great. And who knows? Maybe someday, maybe you'll be a head coach. Heck, maybe you'll be in this league. Maybe I'll be begging you for an interview somewhere down the line.
Who knows? Honestly, I really enjoy this level of coaching. I know it's only been a couple weeks, but it seems so fun. It seems very rewarding just to see guys progress from day to day or from game to game. So who knows? We'll see what happens. You've been there for a lot of my first games. I think you were there for my first goal too.
Yeah.
So I guess my first interview since I've gotten this new job. So you just like to be there. So
I try, man. Thanks again. I really appreciate it. And best of luck. Enjoy yourself. I know you will.
Thanks. I appreciate it.
I hope you enjoyed that. That was so much fun for me to catch up with Greg after all these years and watch him start to make that transition from a player to a coach. I think he's going to be great at it. I really do. His personality that came through in that interview. He's very real. He's very honest. He's very hardworking, and he is willing to do whatever job you give him, and he's going to get better at it. I love those stories about Gary Agnew being the head coach in Syracuse before he came to Columbus as an assistant coach. And I remember, you have to understand, in the East Coast Hockey League and in the American Hockey League, when you're the radio guy, you're the go-between with the head coach and the players, okay? I mean, you spend most of your time hanging out with the coach and the trainers, but you also have your relationship with the players, and it's a go-between, and they both understand it. You know, the coach understands that he can say anything about the player and you're not going to go tell the player unless you're trying to help the player. I mean, I've gone to players and said, hey man, listen, I know you're frustrated. What he's told me is if you just make this little change, it would be better for you. I've done that before. You know, the players can complain about the coach and they know you're not going to go tell the coach. So there's this trust factor when you're in the minor leagues in hockey and in baseball. It was the same thing there. But I remember Gary Agnew, he would harp on Greg Maldon in ways because, as you heard Greg say, he knew he could be a better player. And, you know, that in that go-between, I'm sure there was frustration on Greg's part. And if I recall correctly, there was on some of the things that, you know, we talked about. And there was frustration on the coach's part about the things that he wasn't doing. So to listen to him talk about those days and to listen to him talk about his career and his appreciation for the game, and now he has a chance to pass that off on young players, make them better, hopefully get them into college, get them into the pro ranks. I think that is awesome. So Greg Maldon, former Blue Jacket, this is where it started for him in pro hockey, came right out of UMass Amherst and played for the Blue Jackets, and now he is coaching in USA Hockey. Unbelievable. Thanks for joining me for this edition of CBJ in 30, presented by Telhio Credit Union. Tell you what I do, what I will do. I'll get off this show because I can't talk for the third time. But what I'll do every week, you want to send me questions at any time, you can do it on Twitter, at Bobby Mac Sports, via my email. You want to do a voice question, video question, or just write out your question. I don't, maybe you don't like Twitter, or you don't have Twitter, or whatever. Are you sick of Twitter? You got off of Twitter for whatever. Whatever. It doesn't matter. You can email me, Bobby Mac, BobbyMac, at BlueJackets.com, whatever you want to do. I've got to rest. I got to get some sleep. I know. I'm a wuss. You know, I don't normally at this time of the year, I'd be working every day. We'd be jet setting all over North America. And I'm out of my routine. I got to find a way to get back into my routine. But again, thanks for being here. I appreciate it. As always, I'll talk to you next week on another edition of CBJ in 30, presented by Telhio Credit Union. Until then, I'm Bob McElligott saying so long.